Out front next, breaking news as Trump stares down 5 days until his first criminal trial in New York. The judge in yet another criminal trial, the classified documents case, just issuing a separate ruling, this time siding with the special counsel Jack Smith. And the unbelievable 180 inside the Republican Party, the GOP running as fast as they can away from a major court ruling today that bans nearly every abortion in the state of Arizona. So why are they so afraid of that? Isn't that what they said they wanted? And a CNN investigation this hour into one of the single deadliest events in Gaza. Tonight, casting major doubt on Israel's official version of the events. Let's go out front. And good evening, I'm Erin Burnett. Out front tonight, the breaking news, 5 days until Trump's criminal trial begins in New York. Trump denied at every turn tonight as he tries to stall that case. Just moments ago, another key decision coming out in a separate Trump trial as well. This in just the past hour, a ruling in Trump's Mar-a-Lago classified documents case, who gave Jack Smith a partial win, siding with his request to withhold real names of witnesses in court documents. But, and there are many buts here, but one of them in particular is huge. Judge Cannon still has not announced a trial date for that classified documents case, coming under intense criticism that she's doing exactly what Trump wants in delaying the case. Now, we're going to have more on that breaking ruling in just a moment. Paula Reed's breaking some more details here at this moment. But again, this is the result of a last-minute hearing for Trump in New York today, a very terse rejection. Today, Trump's legal team arguing to an appeals court judge that his hush money case should be delayed while the former president challenges a gag order. The decision, though, was swift. Moments after the hearing ended, the judge in these two terse pages rejecting Trump's argument, and at the very end, lots of lines you could have put for your reasoning, and she only needed two. This application for an interim stay of the proceedings pending resolution of the Article 78 proceeding is denied. Justice Cynthia Kim, then signing merely with her initials here, CSK, Cynthia Kern, I'm sorry. So as of tonight, Trump's first criminal trial with 34 counts is full steam ahead to begin on Monday. Trump will become the first U.S. president to face criminal prosecution. And the jury pool in Manhattan is already set for this. Jury selection will begin on Monday. And everyone who's scheduled to show up on Monday has known they're showing up on Monday. So they know who they are. Paula Reed is out front. And Paula, the New York case about to make history tonight, even as Judge Cannon in Florida again refuses to set a trial date.
Yeah, here Cannon did at least decide one of the key issues that has created really like a logjam in this case, and that is whether to reveal the names of witnesses. And she said for now those names will remain secret, but this has caused a lot of tension between the special counsel's office and Judge Cannon after Cannon pushed for more transparency and said she was going to reveal more information in this case. But tonight, she conceded that the special counsel is right. If she were to reveal the names of these witnesses, Erin, we've reported some of these witnesses are low-level employees at Trump's club. That could potentially subject them to risk and harassment. Now, Cannon, she's been under a lot of scrutiny for her approach to this case. She still has over a dozen motions outstanding. And as you noted, the biggest decision she hasn't made is where to put this case on the calendar. We were in court with her well over a month ago to hear arguments on that issue, and she still has not set a date. Now, Erin, I get a lot of questions amid this tension, this scrutiny about whether the special counsel will move to try to get Cannon removed from this case. Now, there's no indication in their filings that they're going to do that at this point, but if they were, that's difficult. That's a high bar. They would need a record of mistakes or missteps, and right now, her record is pretty thin, but you can bet if they do attempt that in the future, this backtrack will likely be part of the record.
Certainly, it would seem that way. All right, thank you very much, Paula. And I want to go now to our legal analyst, Ryan Goodman, Sarah Krisoff, former U.S. prosecutor for the Southern District here in New York, and Robert Hirschhorn, an attorney and jury and trial consultant. So thanks so much to all of you. So, Ryan, it's brief. As I said, terse, it didn't take much. I mean, I'm sure you could add lines if you needed to, but she only needed two of the roughly 10 lines here. So is there anything else Trump could do that could result in the delay of a case scheduled to start in 5 days?
I can't see anything that he could do. I think we're going to go to trial on Monday. The only kind of unforeseeable event is if his legal team fell apart and then he tried to call for a rescheduling, but that wouldn't happen. His legal team is in place for him across multiple cases. So he's stuck with them, they're stuck with him, and he's stuck with this trial.
Sarah, what do you think?
I agree. I mean, he's done everything he can do here to try to delay this, and it's just not going to happen. I think we're going forward on Monday, whether he likes it or not.
I mean, and it, as I said, it will be history-making. I mean, that is the first time a former U.S. president has faced a criminal prosecution. Robert, on Monday, of course, a judge said you can't delay the trial. You've got this jury pool, though, already set, right? Already set. They're going to show up. They know who they are. We've gone through that. They've got a long questionnaire with 42 questions that they're going to be asking each and every potential juror. So how does the process start from here?
Yeah, Aaron, thank you so much for having me on the show. So first, we'll see if Trump has any more continuances up his sleeve, him and his team. We'll see, because I won't believe it till Monday comes.
Right.
So what's going to happen is the judge is going to call those jurors in. He's going to put them in panels or groups. As I understand it, it's somewhere around 500 jurors that he's summoned. And what he's going to do, it's fascinating, Aaron, what he's doing. He's going to talk to the jurors and basically say to them, look, here's how long the trial's going to last. Just because you might have childcare issues, work issues, that in and of itself is not going to be enough. So I want to know two things. Do you have an opinion about the case? And do you have a hardship? Do you have an opinion that's so strong that you can't be a fair and impartial juror? And what the judge is going to do is literally have the panel members raise their hand up to see if either they have a strong opinion or they have a hardship. He's going to literally line the jurors up, have them come up and talk one at a time and tell the judge what their hardship is or what their, you know, why they can't be a fair and impartial juror. It's going to be a fascinating process.
I mean, it is fascinating to imagine 500 people sort of parading through there. Sarah, I mean, the way the system is supposed to work is that all of us citizens as jurors are supposed to answer those questions honestly. And this is your duty as a citizen. Do you think that is reasonable to expect, that people are going to say, I have a strong opinion? Or, I mean, among the questions were, you know, checking where you get the news, checking what podcasts you listen to, checking what books you've read.
Yeah, I mean, looking at those questions, I think they're really fairly designed to sort of flesh out what people's views are and whether they have biases or preconceived notions. You know, you would hope that people answer them honestly, but there may be people who very much want to serve on the jury, and there may be people who very much don't want to serve on the jury, and they may adjust their answers accordingly.
Right, and you know, we understand that happens. So Ryan, at the same time, and I think this is very important, so, and I know Robert said, I'll believe it when I see it, right? Get to the finish line. But if this starts on Monday, as it seems now in this five-day countdown that it will, at the same time, a three-judge panel, if I'm correct, right, will be listening to Trump's appeal on a gag order in the case, which could potentially affect the timing, the trial itself. How does that happen, that these two things are going sort of at the same time, parallel paths?
So I think the important thing to think about is that Trump's argument for why he should not be gagged and what he says about witnesses and the like is he's saying, I have a First Amendment right to speak my mind to the public and I'm campaigning. He's not saying, I get to say this because I want to influence the jurors. Mm-hmm. So that's why you can have them on two separate tracks. Get the jury started, get the trial started, have that happen. And then, yes, it's actually important to have the briefing and everything occur very quickly on the gag order in order to potentially release him or not, for what he wants to say publicly, but it's not about what he wants to say directed at the court or at the jurors, at the trial. That's why these two things can happen at the same time.
And Robert, do you expect anyone in these 500, I mean, there are going to be some people, I would presume, because it's always the case in New York, are going to say that they're not aware of the case, but the majority of them, one would think, would be well aware of at least some of the details on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You'd have to be living under a rock not to have heard about this case, the hush money case or the Stormy Daniels case. Everybody would have heard of it, Aaron, the vast majority. But here's the issue. Can you take whatever opinions that you have about the case or former President Trump and set those aside and decide this case based on the testimony, the evidence, and the law? And if the jurors say yes, they're going to be on the jury panel, at least the panel, if not the actual jury. And if they say no, the judge is going to cut them loose because the process he set up, Aaron, it's designed to ferret out the vast majority of people that either have a legitimate hardship or just can't be fair and impartial. So he's going to wean that group of 500 down to maybe 150. And that's the group that's going to be answering the 42 questions.
That's going to really answer those questions. It is amazing. And I think for people to realize, you know, what happens in Manhattan, that 500 people are going to show up, not the situation, of course, in the vast majority of locations in the country. So, Ryan, the other thing, Paula Reid breaking the news on Judge Cannon. So several parts to the ruling. One, okay, the names are going to be redacted of the witnesses in the actual documents. But Trump is still allowed to post things about these people or things they've said, and she still refuses a court date. What do you take away from that today?
So I think she did the most important thing, which is to protect the identity of the witnesses so that the public at large would have a harder time trying to target them.
Figure out who they are.
Exactly. Right? And it dovetails with what's happening in New York, that the gag order is in place because, as the judge, Judge Merchan, said, otherwise what Trump has done with his statements to identifying people specifically is create an atmosphere of intimidation. So that's at least what she has done today, tonight, is essentially try to protect some of the witnesses from that atmosphere of intimidation. And it could have been awful if she had decided it in the other direction. Just imagine some of these witnesses dropping out. That could have been the easy result.
Right. All right. Well, thank you all three very much. And next, the major Supreme Court ruling from the state of Arizona, upholding an 1864 law, bringing a whole new meaning to precedent, which bans nearly every abortion in the state. It is a law that Republicans like Carrie Lake were once huge fans of.
I'm incredibly thrilled that we are going to have a great law that's already on the books.
Well, she's not so thrilled tonight. Wait till you hear what she's saying, because she doesn't want to lose her Senate race. She's not the only one running far, far away. Plus, President Biden offering one of his sharpest rebukes yet of Netanyahu. As a CNN investigation, you'll see this hour, of one of the single deadliest mass casualty events in Gaza, casts major doubt on Israel's version of events. We're talking about the world's kitchen food workers and the modern day gold rush. Gold rallying to new records. Costco cannot keep gold bars in stock. Should we actually be buying gold now? Susie Orman will be out front.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life wherever you get your podcasts.
Tonight, a massive flip-flop inside the GOP. Republicans now sprinting away from one of the issues that has defined that party for decades, an issue that Republican presidential candidates down to local lawmakers have campaigned on again and again, a crucial litmus test for the entire Republican Party. The issue is abortion. And Republicans are now tripping over themselves after the Arizona Supreme Court rolled abortion rights back to 1864, upholding a 160-year-old abortion ban. It outlaws nearly all abortions in the state unless necessary to save the mother's life. That means rape, incest, all that not included, just the mother's life. The law actually sends abortion providers up to prison for up to 5 years. Now, that is one of the toughest laws in the country. And now some Republicans who have claimed to be against abortion rights are doing all they can to distance themselves from today's decision. So let's just start at ground zero on this one in Arizona with Carrie Lake, who is running for Arizona's open Senate seat. Today, she released a statement which reads, and I quote, "I oppose today's ruling, and I am calling on Katie Hobbs and the state legislature to come up with an immediate common sense solution that Arizonans can support." Okay, that would be fine if she just was breaking her silence on this issue. You know, you might say, oh, who'd ever heard of a law from 1864? Well, Carrie Lake had. And in fact, she had ardently supported this very law from 1864. Here she is talking about it 2 years ago.
We have a great law on the books right now.
I'm incredibly thrilled that we are going to have a great law that's already on the books. I believe it's ARS 133603. So it will prohibit abortion in Arizona, except to save the life of a mother. And I think we're going to be paving the way and setting course for other states to follow.
So she didn't even just say, oh, I support this law in the book. She exactly said what the law did, right? That only in the life of the mother. That's the 1864 law. She made it very clear. She knew what it was and she supported it. Lake's flip-flopping because she knows that Arizona is not paving the way when it comes to the way voters want. And Arizona's Civil War era law is not what voters want. I mean, look at the map. When you see this across the country, Ohio, California, Michigan, Vermont, and conservative states, Kansas, Kentucky, Montana, have all gone to the polls to protect access to abortion. You had that state legislative seat won in Alabama by Marilyn Lanz. You are seeing it across this country. Kayla Tausche is out front live outside the White House to begin our coverage of this tonight. And Kayla, the White House tonight, ready to fight on this issue. They believe that this is key to Biden's reelection. How much are the Republican flip-flopping attempts, though, complicating things for Biden in that?
Well, Aaron, there are still Republicans who are flip-flopping in the other direction, swing state Republican candidates who have been a little bit more circumspect on the issue and now are siding with the policy position that President Trump, the former president, has laid out this week, where he has said to let the states decide. And it's that position that in conversations tonight, senior White House officials, senior Biden campaign officials say is going to be the galvanizing issue for voters. And it's going to help them establish a very clear contrast between what their candidate will do and what former President Trump is outlining. One campaign official described it to me as a state-level Dobbs, referring, of course, to the case in 2022 that helped the Supreme Court overturn Roe v. Wade, sparking protests across the country and giving Democrats a strong showing in the 2022 midterms. And campaign officials cite polling in Arizona that show that 62% of Arizonans believe that abortion should be legal in all or most cases. But the challenge for Biden in that state is going to be how many other issues voters will have to consider there. Take what the Wall Street Journal found just last month when it polled voters across swing states, including in Arizona. Abortion was actually the only issue where Biden bested Trump. You'll see in other cases, like on the economy, immigration, and fitness for office, President Trump was about 20 points higher than President Biden. Even so, they're going full court press on this issue alone. Vice President Harris will be in Tucson later this week, and there are going to be many more surrogates visiting Arizona and other swing states to talk about this.
All right, Kayla, thank you very much. And let's bring in CNN political commentator and the host of PBS Firing Line, Margaret Hoover. Okay, so it's amazing to look at how Arizonans view the issue of abortion as Kayla lays out those polls. Yeah. No surprise then that Carrie Lake's running away from it. Maybe the surprise is how much she knew about it, that she had it down accurately, and she so stridently supported it before.
Well, you know, it bears repeating. As you've said, this is a Civil War era law that was on the books in Arizona, 1864. Arizona wasn't even a state, Aaron, when this law was on the books. So the Supreme Court in Arizona has just ignored a 2022 ban on abortion that was 15 weeks in favor of a territorial law that wasn't even on the books, and it was argued. And this is the key, and this is why Carrie Lake took this position. She was running for governor in 2022, and she was defending an argument from a far-right extremist group called the Alliance Defending Freedom. This is a deeply conservative, litigious group. They argue that they're doing the thing they accuse others of. This is lawfare using socially conservative ideology to fuel their arguments. And this group, the Alliance Defending Freedom, is responsible for the most onerous anti-LGBT laws and anti-trans laws that are being passed in state legislatures across the country. They are responsible for the argument the state Supreme Court in Arizona accepted.
So she is, and I guess, and then she had felt like she had to pander to them or to be on their
side. Because she's galvanizing that narrow niche of support in order to try to get her over the finish line for her gubernatorial race. Now she's running away from it because guess what? Actually, Arizona Republicans in a statewide race, Arizona Republicans, remember, think Barry Goldwater, okay? Barry Goldwater, who may have been sort of this pillar in the conservative movement, but Arizona conservatives are libertarians on social issues, and they always have been. It was Barry Goldwater's family who actually helped establish the first Planned Parenthood in Arizona.
Wow.
This is not a state that is going to want the government to impede your personal liberty.
It is amazing to see whether she'll be able to get away with such a direct flip-flop, though. I mean, they don't always come as clear as this one.
I have spoken to state electeds in the last hour, Republican state electeds, and they believe that this will absolutely flip the legislature. This will absolutely impact the presidential election. This has Republicans now on their back feet. There is no way Donald Trump is going to carry this state.
Trump has said that he put it to the states. They put it to the states. That's what you get in Arizona.
Well how's it going? It's not going to go so well for him in Arizona. And truly, this is, they said 65% of Arizonans are in favor of this. I mean, this is the most draconian law now we have in all the states and all the books. No exceptions for rape. No exceptions for incest. Only in the case of the death of the mother. I mean, this is truly, I mean, this is a Civil War era, 19th century law. Now on the books in 2024.
Pretty incredible. All right, Margaret, thank you very much. And out front next, CNN investigates one of the biggest mass casualties events of the Gaza war. And what CNN uncovered is raising questions about Israel's official timeline of events. Plus, Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene dialing up the pressure to oust Speaker Mike Johnson. But if Trump told her to back down, would she? Well, you're going to hear, because Manu Raju just asked her in a one-on-one interview. Breaking news, President Biden with some of his harshest criticism yet of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's handling of the war in Gaza, including the Israeli strike on the World Central Kitchen aid convoy in which 7 workers were killed who were delivering food to Gaza.
I think what he's doing is a mistake. I don't agree with his approach. I think it's outrageous that those three vehicles were hit by drones and taken out.
This comes as CNN investigates another fatal incident involving the Israeli Defense Forces. This one, the single deadliest mass casualty into one of the single deadliest casualty events in Gaza. And CNN's report tonight casts serious doubt on the official Israeli version of events that happened on that day. I want to note earlier, I said the investigation was about the World Central Kitchen incident. I want to make it clear that this report is about a separate incident. It occurred on February 29th. More than 100 people were killed. Warning that some of the images that you are about to see in this investigation are graphic. Katie Polglaze is out front.
It's early morning on February 29th on Al Rashid Road in northern Gaza. Thousands of starving people have gathered here to receive food. But as the aid trucks arrive, this happens. The night would become known as the Flower Massacre. By morning, over 100 would be dead in one of the single biggest mass casualty events of this conflict. CNN investigated this incident, obtaining never-seen-before videos of that night, collecting evidence from 22 eyewitnesses and tracing the aid itself all the way to a Muslim charity in the UK. It was the IDF that was then responsible for safely delivering these vital supplies. But we found they opened fire on unarmed, starving Palestinians at close range as the aid arrived. Their explanation for the tragedy, using this drone video, was a stampede that caused soldiers to fire warning shots in the air. They later admitted to firing some shots directly at so-called suspects who approached them. But the IDF footage is incomplete. It cuts between crowds surrounding the trucks and bodies lying on the ground. Even this reveals they were firing in a densely packed area, likely to cause severe bloodshed. CNN requested the full footage from the IDF, but it was denied. Jihad Abu Watfa was amongst the starving Palestinians and started filming as the trucks crossed into northern Gaza. Videos from Jihad and another key eyewitness, Bilal, indicate the gunfire started earlier than the IDF claimed. The IDF published this timeline saying the trucks arrived at the checkpoint at 4 a.m. They then crossed at 4:29, and only after that did the IDF fire shots at the crowd. But in Bilal's video, filmed 7 minutes earlier at 4:22 a.m., gunshots ring out. He warns there is a tank. The IDF claim the convoy was still stationary at the checkpoint at this time. Next, Jihad begins filming. It's now 4:28 a.m. and there's a barrage of gunfire, and the shots are close. Analysis by weapons experts of the bursts indicate it is heavy automatic gunfire at 600 rounds per minute. Jihad keeps filming. A tank is beside me. We're now under siege, he says. Moments later, you see a truck driving along the road. We spotted traces from the gunfire here. One can be seen ricocheting up here, according to weapons experts. As day broke, the number of dead and injured that emerged was staggering. Interviews with survivors at hospitals afterwards found some people had been shot in the upper body. Amid the devastation, CNN found a clue as to who had delivered this aid, this box with the writing Ummah Welfare Trust.
This was the first time that the aid had reached northern Gaza, and we were very, very excited and happy that finally we had gone through.
They received the terrible news as to what had happened via WhatsApp.
I woke up to some photos with cardboard boxes of our logo, Ummah Welfare Trust, with bloodstains on them. And it came as a shock. This is the first time in 20 years where I've actually seen blood being mixed with aid.
In all, at least 118 died that day. With the UN struggling to access northern Gaza, the IDF are responsible for ensuring aid arrives safely. Despite this, the UN has documented 24 attacks on Palestinians awaiting aid in the last 3 months alone. For those like Jihad, living on the verge of famine, it has led to a desperate fight for survival. And now that fight becomes more challenging than ever.
Well, Aaron, the IDF have not yet responded to CNN's questions on these findings. We've also asked for that full, unedited drone footage, but those requests have been denied. And really, this investigation is calling into question the IDF's ability to safely deliver, distribute aid when it's clearly most desperately needed. Aaron.
All right, Katie, thank you very much again for another outstanding report of Katie and her investigative team. I want to go now to the Democratic Senator Chris Coons of Delaware, member of the Foreign Relations Committee. Senator, I appreciate your time. After the World Central Kitchen airstrike, you know, you had said conditions may need to be put on U.S. aid to Israel. Now you've been able to see the CNN investigation. I know you just saw it here for the first time yourself, but it contradicts the IDF's official account of how at least 118 people were killed after they lined up for food aid in Gaza. Shows that the gunfire started at least 7 minutes earlier than the IDF actually said. Heavy automatic gunfire. And calling into question their full account. What's your reaction, Senator?
Aaron, what's clear both from the reporting I just saw on CNN and from dozens of previous incidents is that far too many civilians have died in the 6 months of this conflict against Hamas, and far too many aid workers have died, nearly 200. The World Central Kitchen incident riveted the attention of many here in Congress because Jose Andres is known to many of us. But frankly, many other incidents like the one you were just documenting, in which more than 100 died, also have shown that the chaos in Gaza, the civilian deaths in Gaza, and the difficulty delivering humanitarian aid has gotten to a point where there needs to be changes made. In the last few days, more aid trucks have gotten into Gaza than at any point in 6 months. I think more than 400 today. And the Netanyahu government has announced an intention to open the Erez Gate in the north, which, if that's done, could make a significant impact on the hunger bordering on famine in the north of Gaza, as well as the Ashdod port and a route through Kerem Shalom for trucks from Jordan. This is long overdue, and I think it's time for us to see some significant changes like this.
Senator, to the extent that this report calls into question, though, the official version, a very specific timeline that had been put out by the IDF, it just raises a crucial question for you and your colleagues, but you in dealing with Israeli officials. Do you trust what the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says right now?
Well, look, it's been an important but a challenging relationship. The United States and Israel are close and longstanding allies. We are committed to defending Israel against any attack by Iran. And it's important to remember how this entire six-month-long conflict began with the horrifying terrorist attack by Hamas. I've met with Prime Minister Netanyahu many times, and I raised with him in person 6 weeks ago when I last met with him the urgency of addressing deconfliction, the number of folks who were being killed in an attempt to deliver aid. That deconfliction clearly did not get fixed. So clearly there is more work to be done.
And no, and your fellow Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren, she was asked if she thought Israel was committing genocide in Gaza. She answered, and I quote her, "If you want to do it as an application of law, I believe they'll find that it is genocide, and they have ample evidence to do so." The "they" she's referring to is international court. She's talking about a court of law. But, you know, when you talk about you've had conversations with Netanyahu and then clearly things still need to be addressed, it was, I believe, how you still put it. Do you agree with her? Is this genocide?
I don't think that's a legal conclusion that I can or should reach tonight. But I think President Biden and many of us in the Senate have been pressing for changes in policy and practice. We've been clear that a large-scale attack on Rafah, even though there are still Hamas battalions there, is not justified without providing for civilians to move out of the way, and that there has to be a change in terms of the humanitarian relief that's getting into Israel. I'm wearing a small note that says 186 on it as a reminder that there are still hostages being held by Hamas underneath Gaza. I met with a hostage family earlier today with Hirsch Goldberg Poland's mother, Rachel, and my hope is that we are seeing progress in the negotiations in Cairo, that Hamas will accept the latest offer from Israel, and we will see both a hostage release and a ceasefire.
Senator Coons, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Erin.
And next, Marjorie Taylor Greene ramping up her threat to oust the Speaker Mike Johnson tonight. Is Trump supporting her crusade? You're going to hear the details of what she's telling Armanu Raju. He just spoke to her. He's going to share what she said with you. And Costco cannot keep gold bars. Yes, they have real bars made of gold. What else? They've got everything in Costco. They can't keep them in stock. So should you be buying them? It's a big question here. Susie Orman is out front next.
The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish. There's been a ton of writing about the album Cowboy Carter since it dropped this spring. But what grabbed my attention is a new documentary on CNN called Call Me Country, Beyoncé and Nashville's Renaissance. Lots of artists have tried to boot scoot their way onto country music charts. Why did this album cause such a stir? And what about both this pop star and this political moment has caused all this conversation? Listen to The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish, on your favorite podcast app.
All right, breaking news. Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene just telling Armanu Raju that Speaker Mike Johnson has, quote, completely betrayed his party. Her comments coming just hours after she sent a scathing five-page letter to House Republicans pushing for his ouster, writing in part, quote, "He is throwing our own razor-thin majority into chaos by not serving his own GOP conference that elected him." Well, Manu is out front on Capitol Hill. And Manu, you just had a chance to speak to Congresswoman Greene, who could be the one to oust the speaker here. It only takes one. She's been saying she's going to do it. And you had a chance to talk to her about that and whether Trump is supporting her efforts. What did she tell you?
Yeah, she made clear that she is not backing off. She would not detail exactly what would trigger this vote, the call that she could call at any moment, really, to seek Mike Johnson's ouster. But she did warn him not to move forward with a Ukraine aid package, just as Mike Johnson is at the moment trying to cobble together a Ukraine aid package. She told me that she did not speak with Johnson on Friday, even as they would plan to speak, because she declined to do so, saying that she needed to speak to her constituents first. And she plans to speak with them this week if he's willing to do so. But, Aaron, she did speak to Donald Trump earlier today, and I asked her whether or not Trump is supporting her effort.
Well, I absolutely love President Trump. I have a great relationship with him. I talked to him earlier today. I won't speak for President Trump, and I don't think this is really a problem.
You don't think he'll? Do you think he'll weigh in one way or the other? Is he dissuading you?
I will never speak for President Trump about he will or won't do. He's the leader of our party, and I always leave that up to him, respectfully. Mm-hmm. But I think President Trump is far more focused on winning his campaign to become president of the United States in 2025. I definitely don't think he wants a Republican Speaker of the House that will fund the Department of Justice that's trying to put him in jail for the rest of his life.
If he called you and said, Marjorie, back off, would you listen to him?
He hasn't called me and said that yet. So, again, I don't speak for President Trump. That's totally up to him to weigh in if he wanted to. I think he's focused on his election, and he should be.
But, Aaron, there are still a lot of questions about how exactly this will play out, not just the timing, but where the votes will be. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time today talking to Republicans, many of them either noncommittal or just flat out opposed to this effort. And will Democrats come to Speaker Johnson's defense if he moves forward on Ukraine aid? That is something the Democratic leader, Hakeem Jeffries, won't weigh in on tonight.
Mm. And obviously at the heart of all of this, Manu, thank you very much. And at the heart of it, the election and Americans' deep fears about the economy. And that brings us to what really is a new gold rush in America. People, regular Americans, not just investors or big banks, are rushing to buy actual gold, physical gold, amid inflation concerns. Look at Costco. Costco only started selling gold bars last year for proof. Okay, so this is the situation. They start selling a year ago, and Wells Fargo is now estimating that Costco is now selling up to $200 million a month in gold bars. Now, I just want to, it sounds enormous. It is. By comparison, Costco sold $100 million in gold bars for the entire quarter that ended last November. So an entire quarter, $100 million, and now running at $200 million a month. Bank of America now projecting that the price of an ounce of gold, which hit seven straight record highs lately, will hit $3,000 by the end of the year. Up front now, Susie Orman, one of the world's best-known personal finance advisors and the founder of Secure Save and the host of the Women and Money podcast. So, Susie, I lay all this out because it comes from a place of a lot of very real fears of inflation and prices going up and feeling like your money doesn't go as far and people are rushing into gold. Are you shocked when you hear things like this? $100 million, first of all, they weren't even selling them a year ago. Then they sell them, one quarter, $100 million. Now they're running at $200 million a month in gold bars. Is that something anybody should be buying?
Well, here's the thing, Erin, is that people always have this herd mentality and this fear of missing out. It happened with Bitcoin. Bitcoin's going up, it's going up, it's going up. Oh, I have to buy it. Oh, gold. Never even thought about gold before. Now here you're in Costco and people are in line and they're running out of it and they're only let people buy in five a piece. And all of a sudden this frenzy starts and everybody wants to be a part of it, especially when they see the price going up. And the price has gone up 13% so far this year. What they are not thinking about, however, is that it's one thing to buy gold and get a physical bar. It's another thing to have to sell it. And that is not what they are thinking about. You have to have it surveyed. All these things. Where do you go? Where do you keep it? Is it insured? Is it not? And so there's a lot of things that I think people really need to think about when you're buying physical gold. Listen, if you want to be invested in gold, you can do it through an ETF. You can do it many ways. But to buy the actual commodity, I'm not sure is something that people should be doing.
And that, which is a crucial point. The point you make of if you do believe that gold is a good thing to buy, right, as a sort of a hedge, as you know, as against inflation, that there are other ways to do it, as you mentioned, exchange-traded funds and other ways. Do you, Susie, right now have fears about where inflation is going? Those fears that clearly is where a lot of Americans are getting this anxiety from.
I do have fear about it, but for different reasons than before. Now I'm afraid because commodities are going up, not just gold. Look at the price of oil. Oil's at $86, $89, right in there, depending if it's WTI or Brent. And as oil goes up, what else happens? The price of gasoline starts to go up. So people start to feel it every single day as they're filling up their tanks. Then everybody starts to talk about it again. And also the news is saying, what's going to happen tomorrow with the CPI? Is inflation going to go up? Is it not? And so then you see people coming out of stocks, possibly going into bonds and vice versa. I think everybody needs to just calm down. And I think they need to see really where is it at and not be investing according to inflation. Aaron, they need to be investing according to what's going on in their individual lives. Are they older and do they need fixed income? So should they be buying a 20 or 30 year treasury bond and locking it up? Or are they younger and should they be in the stock market? So I think everybody is just freaking out right now, but I don't think they need to be freaking out as much as they are.
And everyone is freaking out. I mean, that's the reality. I think it's more macro than even the economy, right? It's sort of a soul-searching moment of great anxiety when you talk about politics and democracy and what's at stake and then the economy. The context here, you've got a Zillow analysis. I know you were looking at this, Susie. 550 cities in the United States where the typical value of a home is $1 million or more. At the same time as a new CNBC survey that you led found that 65% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck and say that they only have, $400 of emergency money. Credit card debt is surging.
$400 Aaron, of emergency money. So you have two sectors really going on, which are the rich people are getting richer and richer. They have the money to be investing in stock, in AI, taking advantage of everything. Want to know what's really sad is 25% of the real estate that people could have bought themselves were bought by investors, people who wanted to make money. The big people, which left littler inventories for those people who just wanted to buy a home. So it's getting really difficult, not just because of interest rates and mortgages, but because of insurance and everything. But there's always hope out there, and there's always a way to find your way to that pot of gold.
All right. Well, you know what, Susie? I like talking to you because when I feel anxiety about all of these things, and I do, I think everybody watching does, like I said, on an existential deep level, it is good to be confronted with your always optimism. So thank you so much. Good to talk to you. And next, the mother and father of the teenage gunman who shot and killed four students in Michigan have now been sentenced. As of tonight, we have an update for you, the full details, and the 33-year-old woman from Los Angeles who is being held in a Russian prison tonight. Her boyfriend has just received new information from her, and he's going to tell us what it is. Tonight, the maximum sentence for the parents of school shooter Ethan Crumbly. A judge has ruled that James and Jennifer Crumbly will spend 10 to 15 years in prison. The parents were convicted of involuntary manslaughter after their son shot and killed four of his classmates. The judge's ruling coming after heartbreaking impact statements from the families of the victims. Whitney Wild is out front.
It is the sentence of this court, Ms. Crumbly, that you serve 10 to 15 years. James Crumbly, it is the sentence of this court that you serve 10 to 15 years with the Michigan Department of Corrections.
10 to 15 years. That's how long the parents of the teenager who shot and killed four students in 2021 at an Oxford, Michigan high school using a gun they gifted him were sentenced to spend behind bars. Both convicted of involuntary manslaughter in separate trials. It's the first time a parent of a mass shooter has been held criminally responsible.
This tragedy has taken an incredible toll on our family.
Emotions ran high as parents and family members of Tate Meir, Hannah St. Juliana, Madison Baldwin, and Justin Schilling spoke directly to the Crumblies about their loved ones who were killed in the November 2021 shooting.
When you texted, Ethan, don't do it. I was texting Madison, I love you, please call mom.
You have failed your son, and you have failed us all. This failure had deadly consequences that can never be undone, that can never be made right.
Your mistakes created our everlasting nightmare. Our 10-year-old little brother had to learn how to write a eulogy for his sister before he even learned how to write essays.
The Crumbly's son pleaded guilty to 24 charges, including first-degree murder. He was sentenced to life without parole. And while Jennifer Crumbly apologized in court, she continued to place blame on the school.
Not only were you left in the dark about previous concerning behavior, but in the counselor's office that morning, none of those previous issues were brought to our attention.
And James Crumbly, who did not take the stand during his trial, apologizing for the first time.
I am sorry for your loss as a result of what my son did. I cannot express how much I wish that I had known what was going on with him or what was going to happen.
But the judge said these convictions were not about poor parenting.
These convictions confirm repeated acts or lack of acts that could have halted an oncoming runaway train. Opportunity knocked over and over again, louder and louder, and was ignored. No one answered, and these two people should have and sure didn't.
The prosecutor in this case said it's disappointing that the Crumblies didn't express remorse throughout the trial. As for where this family will serve their sentences, James and Ethan Crumbly will not serve their sentences in the same facility. Instead, Aaron, each member of this family will serve out their time in a separate facility. Aaron.
Whitney, thank you very much. From Chicago tonight. And before we go, an out front update. We've been closely following the story of Ksenia Karolina, 33-year-old dual U.S.-Russian citizen from Los Angeles. She's being held tonight in Russian prison. She was arrested while visiting her parents and charged with treason for allegedly donating $51 to a Ukrainian charity. A judge now ordering her to remain behind bars for an additional 3 months at least. But Karolina has been able to exchange letters with her boyfriend here in the U.S. since her arrest. And tonight, he is giving us the very latest on her life in prison and what she is enduring.
They get to shower once a week. That breaks me. She has no hot water. The hardest thing for her is to fall asleep because they refuse to put the lights off. I can tell you this from the letters and stuff. She is scared.
She is scared and alone. But one thing that gives Chris hope, he says, is that Ksenia doesn't actually have to wear a prison uniform.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.